letters on the paper. He chuckled again.
Okay.
He took the pen from my hand, scribbling onto a sticky note.
Here's my number. If you decide you want to come over, text me.
I nodded and took his number, and his whole face lit up. He checked his phone.
All right, now I'm running late.
He pushed himself up to his feet.
Catch you later, Colin.
He pointed at me.
See, I remembered.
I fought my smile, not wanting him to know how much the small gesture made my day. I waved as he left, feeling almost giddy when, just before he went around a building, he looked over his shoulder at me. A foreign, sparkling feeling was rising in my chest. I'd been 19 long enough to observe other boys this age. I knew that romances were many and fleeting and that this attention couldn't last. Still, it was a magical feeling, and I was grateful once again for this boy I barely knew. I felt like I understood Elizabeth on a new level. She craved a physical connection, and she achieved it as best she could. Mieka spent hours typing to people on her computer or phone, wanting to connect intellectually. That was what made them feel alive. Me? I'd been slaving away for the ocean, hoping that at the end of it all, I'd find a romantic connection in my future life. Truth was, there was no way to be sure I could get it. But as I sat there under the tree, something became clear. I wasn't worried. I wasn't sad. I wasn't even thinking that far into the future, because all I could think of was each minute with Akinlee as it happened. Maybe the key for me to move forward wasn't to eliminate everything I was feeling. Maybe all I needed to do was focus on the one feeling that made all the others seem small. I pulled out my phone, laughing at how useless this thing was for me. I did research on it or distracted myself with it more than anything. Under my contacts were three numbers, and Aisling's wasn't even current. I typed in the new one, fingers hesitating. Akinlee? It's Colin. If you're still up for it, I'd love to make some cake this weekend. I let out a long breath and pressed send. I gathered my things to head home, brushing the grass off the back of my skirt. Before I could make it to the edge of campus, my phone buzzed.
I've got pans!
6. I lived for 4 days in a secret world of absolute bliss. I didn't sleep at all because, for the first time in a long time, being awake was so much better. I spent hours looking up recipes, trying to find one that was a little above what a novice might make, but wouldn't be too complicated for a dorm kitchen. I could feel the weight of my sister's stares as I hummed to myself. They didn't question the sudden lift in my mood, perhaps knowing I would remain close-lipped. But when my giddiness didn't fade after a few days, I began to wonder how one boy was having such an effect on me. I told myself that it was completely normal to think wonderful thoughts about someone whose last name I didn't even know. People had crushes on actors and musicians and celebrities they had absolutely no chance of meeting in real life. At least I'd planted my affections on someone who actually knew me. I continually anticipated the next moment we'd be together, trying to keep the whole thing playful and light. I'd text, "You provide the oven and utensils, and I'll bring all the ingredients." He'd reply,
"I will also bring my stomach, because cake is greater than actual food. Deal."
"How do you feel about cream cheese frosting?" I'd ask.
"It doesn't get enough respect, if I'm being honest," he'd say.
The days before our baking date were full of tiny notes like that, leaving me with an hour-long buzz from a single sentence. What made it better was that I didn't always have to start a conversation. By Wednesday, Akinlee's questions were a little bit deeper and came to me unprompted.
"So how long have you been cooking?"
"Feels like forever."
"Did your mom teach you?"
"Actually, it's something I kind of picked up on my own."
Smiley face.
Smiley faces. He sent several. From anyone else, they'd seem ridiculous. But I felt pretty confident that if he typed one in, he was actually smiling. Thursday, we went most of the day without talking, which I really didn't mind. I was in the middle of telling myself that I was making too much of this. Chances were that we'd have this one date, and he'd struggle so much with communicating that he wouldn't want to see me again anyway. And that would be for the best. After all, what kind of future could we possibly have? This was what I was telling myself when, around 10 that night, he sent me a picture of his very confused face with the words, "Why math? Why?" underneath. I lay in my bed laughing uncontrollably. First, he was just so cute. Second, he sent me a picture. I had a picture of a boy that he took just for me, and it felt bigger than anything I had experienced in the last century. There was a quick knock at my door, but Elizabeth and Miyaka opened it before I could answer. "You all right in here?" Elizabeth asked, perching a hand on her hip. I took a deep breath and stopped giggling. "Yeah, I'm fine." Miyaka looked around the room. My TV was off, and there wasn't a book in my hand. "What's so funny?" I picked up my phone. "Just something I saw." "Can we see?" Elizabeth asked, reaching out. I knew, if anything, they'd probably be happy I'd met someone. I just couldn't help but want to keep him to myself a little bit longer. "Not sure you'd get it," I lied. They shared a look, then eyed me suspiciously. "Okay, we'll just go then." Miyaka's gaze lingered on me before the door closed behind them. I tightened my lips, trying not to laugh out of the pure joy of having a secret, then pulled up Akinley's picture again, smiling at his comically drooping eyebrows. I searched through my phone for something to send back to him, maybe a picture of me in one of those dresses I loved. But I discovered that I had never turned the camera on myself. I had images of the sky, a bird, my sisters, but none of me. I flopped down on my pillow, sweeping most of my hair above my head. Part of my face was buried in my comforter, but when I snapped the picture, it felt like an honest representation. I stared at that girl for a while, the giddy glow behind her eyes, the hint of a smile in her cheeks, and thought, yes, this is how this moment makes me feel. I sent it to him saying, "This is when you give up and get in bed. No one will care about your math grades in 6 years. Promise." I wanted to explain how many disasters I'd seen disappear in what felt like only minutes compared to the whole span of time.
"Is it weird if I tell you you're pretty?"
he answered.
"You're pretty."
I thought of the way the water looked when I blew bubbles out of my mouth. That was the way I suspected it looked inside my body right now, light and airy and bursting with happiness.
"Is it also weird if I tell you I like talking to you even though you don't speak? I like talking to you."
"Where are you going?" Miyaka asked the second my hand hit the doorknob the next night. I had really thought I was going to be able to sneak out without them noticing. Elizabeth's music was blaring from her room, and they'd been in serious dress talks for the last 20 minutes. "Just for a walk. Might go by the store. You want anything?" She looked me over, studying my outfit. Around the house, I enjoyed comfy rompers or sweaters, and if this had been an impromptu trip, I'd probably still be in those clothes. My skirt, which I already knew might be a bit much for the occasion, but made me feel as nice on the outside as I did on the inside, was a bit of a giveaway. "No, nothing has sounded worth eating lately." I nodded. "We should hit up a new state soon, or a new country. Sometimes the smell of a different place will make me want to eat, you know?"
"I do. We should make some plans for where to go next. Sometimes our moves are too spontaneous for my tastes."
"Yeah," I said, shifting the weight of my purse. "A strategy would be good." Miyaka smiled and looked at my clothes again.
"Well, maybe we can talk about a lot of things when you come back."
I said nothing, but was sure my smile was as damning as my skirt. Oh well, so much for secrets. I got the groceries and lugged them all the way to Akinley's dorm, running slightly behind because I couldn't get into the building on my own. The university required ID cards to get into the dorms after 6, and since I wasn't an actual student, I had to wait for someone else to come along and scan his so I could piggyback in.
"You need some help?"
the boy asked, his eyes lingering on my mouth. I shook my head no.
"Ah, come on, that's way too heavy for you."
He came closer, and again I cursed our natural appeal. I wasn't in danger, exactly, and I knew that. But it didn't make these encounters any less uncomfortable. I shook my head again.
"No, really, which floor are you on? Hey, Colin."
I looked up to see Akinley walking down the hall. His button-up was open over the gray shirt beneath it, but I was thrilled to see that he'd at least put one on.
I was starting to worry. Hey, Sam. Hey.
The boy gave Akinlee a look and headed toward the stairwell, his displeasure at Akinlee's arrival clear. In the meantime, I felt my mood lift significantly. I was now officially on my first date.
Here, give me one of these.
Akinlee took a bag from my hands that led me to the elevator.
The kitchen's just up here. Now, I did some practicing this morning,
he said proudly. I raised my eyebrows.
Yep, I made eggs. They were terrible.
I held in a laugh as the elevator dinged, delaying a moment before actually opening to the second floor.
I think the problem was that I had no supervision, so this will probably go much better.
We turned into the small kitchen area, and I saw that he'd done some prep work. A whisk and a bowl were already out, as well as two different-sized circular pans. He put down his bag and picked up another item.
I took this off our door. My roommate was a pain about it, but if you need anything, just scribble it down.
He passed me a whiteboard that had already managed to take a beating in the first few months of school. It was such a thoughtful gesture, I nearly cried. I watched him as he carefully took out the eggs and sugar and flour, lining up everything along the back of the counter to give us room to cook.
Is this almond extract? This is fancy. Again, I ruined food today, so remember, you're going to have to walk me through every step of this.
Wordlessly, I pulled out the printed instructions and laid them beside the bowl.
There we go,
he said, picking them up to study. He went over the multiple steps, his face looking more and more worried the closer he got to the end. He pulled himself together and peeked sheepishly at me over the top of the paper.
Okay, Colin, teach me to cook.
7.
Have you always lived in Florida?
I shook my head and cracked another egg. It wasn't one of those things I could easily explain without speech. I waved my hand in a circle and made an exasperated face.
All over the place?
I nodded.
Are your parents in the army or something? I only got to spend a year with one of my best friends in high school before his dad was stationed somewhere else. I hear that's pretty fast, though.
I watched him, listening intently, not really confirming or denying anything about my parents and hoping he wouldn't press any further.
I grew up in this tiny town in Maine, Port Clyde. You ever heard of it?
I shook my head, and he passed me the sugar he'd measured out. I took my finger and brushed the extra heap off the top into the sink.
Oh, is that bad?
He asked. Baking is science, I scribbled on the board.
Huh. Okay, I will tuck that lesson away. So, yeah, Port Clyde. It's really small and mostly known for its lobster. There's also an artist residency there, so we get some creative types coming through town. That's why I thought you might have heard of it. You were drawing the other day, so I didn't know if that was something you were into or what.
I made a so-so gesture with my hand. Even with the whiteboard, it would be hard to explain that I really like drawing because of my sort of sister, and that I wished I was half as good at seeing the world as she was.
My parents are there, dying for me to come home. I'm an only child, so they're kind of lonely without me around. My mom calls me literally, like, every day. I told her she should get a puppy, but she said I was better than a dog, which is good, I guess. Am I talking too much?
He paused, staring into my eyes, genuine worry coloring his face. I shook my head. No, I thought. I listen to you talk about nearly anything. You make phone calls sound like an adventure.
Okay. She's also worried because I'm still undeclared. I don't think that's a huge deal. Not yet, anyway. Do you?
I snapped my first two fingers and thumb together quickly, the ASL sign for no. Realizing he might not understand, I shook my head as well.
Cool. What are you studying? Is it art?
I didn't have another answer, so I nodded.
You've got an artist vibe,
he said knowingly. I looked down at myself, then back up at Akinlee, questioning him with my eyes.
No, really. I'm not sure what it is, but you look like you've made and broken a lot of things and then made them all over again. Which makes no sense, I'm sure. But trust me, it's there.
I started whisking the batter. I was glad he didn't know how much I'd actually broken in my time. Ships that cost millions of dollars, lives no one could put a price on. But I like the idea that maybe, somewhere deep inside me, I was also capable of fixing things. I passed the bowl to him, really hoping he'd participate.
Oh my gosh, okay.
He took the whisk in his hand.
I got this. Okay.
He started whisking. As he worked, I added in a few drops of the almond extract, and after a moment, he looked up at me. I tilted my head questioningly. What? It took him a second to snap out of his stare.
Oh, sorry. Nice teamwork there, he said,
then winced as if he thought he'd said something dumb.
Speaking of teamwork, he added, his voice lighter, I think you could maybe help me with something.
I raised an eyebrow.
Hear me out. See, if you're not talking, you spend almost every second of your life listening, taking things in, right?
I nodded. That was all I did.
I feel like, because of that, you're probably very perceptive. So, as an experiment, I'd like to know what you think I should be studying.
I gawked at him. You mean pick your major? I wrote.
Exactly. I've had a few friends weigh in, but I think they were joking. Someone said musical therapy, and I've never so much as touched a kazoo.
I smirked at his exasperation.
Come on, I need some direction in my life. Give it a shot.
I stared at this boy who I admittedly hardly knew, yet I felt as if I'd learned so much about him, like if anyone asked, I could outline his entire personality. He was so warm, so open, so full of simple joy. What had I done to catch his attention, to have him interested in not just my looks, but my thoughts? I could tell he was actually eager to hear my opinion, so I focused on his question. I could imagine him as an advocate for an abused child or an aid for someone with mental illness, the only person in their whirlwind lives with the capacity to hold them down to the earth. I wrote on the whiteboard again.
Social work?
He asked. I applauded. He laughed, a sound more like music than anything I made.
I'm intrigued. Okay, Colin, I will research this field and get back to you.
He glanced down at the cake batter, then raised the whisk and held it out to me, dripping.
Does this look right?
I touched the whisk, then licked the batter off my finger. Akinley's warm blue eyes held mine as sweetness spread across my tongue. It was perfect. I gave an enthusiastic nod, and he reached to taste it himself.
Hey, not bad for my first cake, yeah?
I grinned. Not bad at all. I greased the pans, excited that because they were two different sizes, we were going to end up with something that looked like a tiny wedding cake.
I don't want to make a big deal about this or anything, but I think it's kind of cool how you do everything you do.
I squinted at him.
I mean, you use sign language, and it's hard to communicate. But you're into art, and you can seriously cook, and for goodness sakes, you can even jitterbug. By the way, I told my mom, and she wants a video. Totally doesn't believe me. But yeah, I think it's nice that you don't let a little hitch in life slow you down. I admire that.
I smiled. For a minute, I admired myself too. He didn't know how deep my problems ran, but he was right all the same. It was no small thing to try, to find out what you cared about in life. Even this moment, with this wonderful temporary boy beside me, was a tiny miracle. I ought to give myself some credit. I went to write my thanks, but had a hard time getting more ink out of the marker.
I thought it might die. You want to come by my room real quick to get another?
Stay calm, I thought. I nodded as nonchalantly as I could.
Awesome. It's this way,
he said with a wave, and I followed him down the hall.
I think my roommate left for a while, so at least you'll be spared that horror. I swear it's like he took lessons in how to be an ass.
I grinned as we came upon a door with the obvious blank space where the dry erase board should be. On two little leaves that his RA had placed on all the doors down the hall were two names, Neil Bashka and Akinley Schaefer. Schaefer. I longed to say it out loud. The shape of the word was so pleasant in my head. I couldn't wait to breathe it into the air. But that would have to wait until I was alone, and not distracted by the disaster that was his room. To be fair, it was only half a disaster. It appeared that Neil's religious practices acknowledged neither trash cans nor recycling bins. Probably so he could build that haphazard altar of Mountain Dew cans by the window. Akinley's thing seemed much homier. Instead of a store-bought comforter, he had a quilt. Instead of posters, he had pictures. Instead of beer cans, he had 3 bottles of Port Clyde Quencher root beer that he appeared to be saving. He had said he was an only child, but there was a slightly older boy in a few of the shots who had the same eyes and chin. I saw his parents and one picture of him as a child holding a lobster in each hand and smiling so big I couldn't see his eyes.
Here we go.
He pulled out a new marker from his desk drawer, and I was drawn back from my quiet observations.
Sorry, it's kind of messy in here,
he said sheepishly, noticing my wandering eyes.
Neil, well, he's a character.
I smiled, trying to let him know I cared less about that than I did all the little pieces of himself I got to peek at, if only for a second. Back in the communal kitchen, we played a game of hangman on the whiteboard between whipping up frosting and waiting for the cake to finish baking. It was all so plain, so simple, and I was grateful for every single moment. When we managed to get both layers on, even though the top one wasn't quite centered and covered the whole thing in buttercream, Akinley posed dramatically in front of our creation.
The moment of truth. Have I overcome a long and difficult season of being the worst cook in America? Colin, the fork, please.
I passed it to him, picking up one myself so I could taste it too. I didn't want to brag, but I was sure Aisling would be impressed.
This is amazing!
Akinley yelled, taking 2 more heaping forkfuls before stopping to breathe.
We cannot keep something this beautiful to ourselves. Come on.
He picked up the plate and headed into the hall.
Who wants cake?
He yelled. A girl with her hair in 2 French braids stuck her head out of an open doorway halfway down the hall.
Me!
Beside us, someone opened his door, too.
What are you hollering about, man? We made cake!
The guy's face turned from irritated to jubilant.
Cool.
Within minutes, half the floor had spilled out, using everything from spatulas to paper cups to get some dessert.
I mean, I did an incredible job,
Akinley said to someone,
but it was mostly Colin.
A few people patted my arm and thanked me for cooking or sharing. One girl said she liked my skirt. I wanted to burst. I felt so happy. Was this what it was like to be a normal 19-year-old girl? Living in a dorm, letting other people's lives spill over into yours, if only for a season? Studying one thing with absolute focus while having dozens of things change around you and learning from that too? Having a boy see you, acknowledge you in such a way that you felt sure no one had ever experienced that feeling before, all the while knowing you joined a long line of people who did the same dance to find the person they spent their lives with. It was timeless and temporary, important and inconsequential, and I got to be a part of it. I wanted to live like this all the time. Then everything in my head slowed down. All the time? How was I supposed to manage that? After all the work it took to get through one date, how was I supposed to make it to 10? Or even 2? I watched Akinley, his smile lighting up the crowd, a natural charisma floating around him. This had been special, beautiful even. But it wasn't sustainable. Eventually, something would rouse his suspicions. Why didn't I ever get hurt? Why didn't my weight ever change? Why did I have to disappear at random? I felt so foolish. In the best version of this, he'd age while I didn't, and then when my time as a siren was over, I'd forget all about him. It might be less painful if he simply forgot about me. I backed slowly out of the crowd, so gifted at being silent that no one even noticed. 8. The girls weren't there when I got home, which was fine. Let them have one last night out in their vibrant coastside college town. I went to my room. Surveying the space, I realized there wasn't much I could actually call my own. There never really was. I put the scrapbooks in my trunk, remembering I was still one person away from knowing the entire list of passengers on the Arcacia. I'd never forgotten about someone mid-search before. Sometimes I let them go when it was clear there was nothing to be found, but this was a first. Akinlee had made me forget what I was for a little while, touched my skin like it was human, spoke to me like I was ordinary. How magical it was just to be a normal girl. There were a few pieces of clothing I liked, and a really nice wooden brush I had found at a flea market once. I had one rust-covered bobby pin that had been in my hair when I'd been changed, and I'd kept it because I assumed it was the same kind my mother used. It was the only thing I had left that tied me to her. There were a handful of other odds and ends, but my trunk was light when I pulled it to the front door. The girls would see it when they came in. They'd know. I went out the back and sat on the floating dock. I stared at the ocean, but didn't speak. I could hear her, though, lapping up onto the shore and curving herself around the wooden beams. I loved her so much. She was home, the place where we could hide when wars raged or anyone looked at us with suspicion. She was life, our sustainer, everyone's sustainer. But now I couldn't help but be resentful. She was also the source of all my guilt, all my unmet dreams. I had so many questions for her, but not tonight. I heard the familiar creak of the front door and headed back inside. Elizabeth and Miaka stood silent, staring at my trunk. Miaka looked on the edge of tears, and Elizabeth grumpily swung her strappy heels on the tips of her fingers. "Why?" Miaka asked as I pushed the sliding door closed. "I need to go." My tone was close to embarrassed, shamed by my weakness. Elizabeth dropped her shoes.
"Well, I don't. Neither does Miaka. We don't want to leave."
I avoided her glare. "I understand, but I can't stay here any longer."
"You always want to live somewhere big, somewhere we can be anonymous. Then you never even try to blend in. We're happy here."
When I peeked up at Elizabeth, the sharp set of her jaw solidified what I'd already guessed. I took a shaky breath, then forced myself to speak evenly. "I'm fine going alone. Maybe you two would be better off without me. Aisling thrives in complete isolation, and it's possible I could too. It's also possible that I would be completely miserable without you." I shrugged. "I really don't know. But if you want to stay, I understand. I'm taking my trunk to the car. I'm waiting 30 minutes. And if you're in the car, then I'd be happy to have you along. If not, I'll see you when we sing." I grabbed my things and took my keys out of my bag, walking past them. Once I was settled in the driver's seat, I pulled out my phone to check the time so I could actually give them the 30 minutes I'd promised, and saw I'd missed two texts. They were both from Akinlee. The first was obvious.
"Hey, where'd you run off to? You okay?"
And then,
"Here's my problem. I've only gained 2 pounds of my freshman 15. Hoping you can help me out and we can try brownies next time?"
Smiley face. No mention of feeling brushed off. He even added a smiley face for good measure. Was it possible I'd run across the nicest person on the planet? A guy like him was as mythical as I was. "Schaefer," I whispered into the night. "Akinlee Schaefer." It was as satisfying to say as I'd hoped. As I looked back down to the phone, my fingers hovered. I wanted to reply, apologize maybe, or explain that I had to move suddenly, but I knew that I couldn't let myself get drawn in. I turned off my phone and inserted the key into the ignition to get the tiny clock on the dashboard up. I watched the clock, and at 29 minutes, my heart sank. I had no idea where I'd go. Beachfront was almost mandatory, as we never knew when there might be an emergency, and it was easier, at least for me, if I could talk to her from time to time. But now it was time to make a choice. I swallowed and turned the key. No sooner had the engine come to life than Miaka stuck her smiling face in the side window. "Pop the trunk for me?" I had more art supplies than I thought. I did as she asked, feeling guilty twice over. I told her earlier that we could discuss our move this time, and now I'd forced her to pack everything in 30 minutes. She climbed into the front seat and sat beside me, pulling her hair up into a messy bun. I don't know why, but I thought you had something special happening. I thought you were getting comfortable here. I feel like I misread you completely. You're only 10 years behind me, I said softly. You know how this life takes its toll. I can't settle in. I try, I swear.
I know.
She put her hand on my knee. You've stayed with us for decades as we've wandered freely. If you need a season of quiet, we can be there for you too.
I rolled my eyes. It looks like it's just you at the moment.
A split second later, the trunk slammed closed, and Elizabeth climbed into the back seat. I emailed the landlord, and we left cash for any cleaning he'll have to do. Let's go. She crossed her arms and threw on her sunglasses, even though it was dark. I didn't say anything, but smiled to myself. My sisters loved me. I drove the whole way. After 3 hours, Elizabeth took over the music. After 6, we saw the sun come up. After 10, we pulled into Polly's Island and found an office that covered beach house rentals. Seeing as it was the off-season and we were awfully pretty, the rental agent didn't question 3 mute girls and our handfuls of cash. By noon, we were settled into a thin gray house at the end of the strip. The area was quiet, with a row of empty summer houses to the left and nothing but sand and beach grass to the right as far as we could see. It was perfect for getting into the ocean and far enough away from town that I wouldn't have to see another soul if I didn't want to.
It's quaint, Mieka said in admiration. Can I have one of the beachfront rooms?
Fine with me. Elizabeth dropped her bags in the middle of the floor. Okay, so this is home now, she said, eyeing the floral curtains and handwoven rugs with disgust.
Just for now, I promised. We won't stay forever.
She came over and wrapped her arms around me. I'll make the best of it, for your sake. Maybe I'll learn to knit.
I pulled back to stare at her.
What? I said maybe.
Thanks for coming. She sighed.
I really didn't have a choice. Mieka's like my other half, but I knew she wouldn't want to make you go alone. And I need you too. I loved Miami, but not as much as I love you too. And I love you. I'd be lost without you.
Oh,
she exclaimed suddenly, walking out of our embrace. Movies! Over my shoulder was a wall of films to entertain guests on rainy days. She loved movies and TV shows, so this at least might pacify her. For now, anyway. I looked out the large front windows at the ocean. I'd settle into our new life, and then I'd go to her. Mieka moved the bed and dresser out of her room so she could turn it into a studio.
Fantastic light, she said repeatedly. Gorgeous.
Elizabeth complained that her room wasn't half as comfortable as the one in Florida, but she tried to fix the situation with new comforters and pillows and a willowy net she bought just to cover her bed. I even moved the TV out of my room and into hers as a gesture of thanks, and she seemed satisfied with the setup after a few days. I took the other room with the ocean view, and I watched her. I didn't know what I was waiting for, but it was taking me time to find the will. Finally, after a week in our new home, I took my first steps across the sand and into the water.
Oh, you moved?
Yes, I thought. I was having a hard time in the city. The others are with me.
What was so hard?
I shook my head and started to cry. Everything. I felt her worry swelling, and I looked up and down the beach. It was late October, and the chill of fall was in the air.
No one was rushing to the beach.
I ran into her, scared and sad.
Your thoughts are too fast, she said. You must slow down.
I'm just so confused, I confessed. Why am I the only one who has nightmares? Even when I'm awake, these things haunt me. And why am I so afraid of humans? How can Aisling live alone without losing her mind? Why did you even pick me? I'm so confused. I'm so tired.
You're thinking way too much. One question at a time. We'll sort through this.
I hit my chest with my fist, accusing my body of failing. I've had 80 years to adjust and never have. Am I broken?
We'll start there. No, you're not broken. You are possibly the most loyal and faithful siren I've ever had.
So, one of the best? Is it bad to tell you that I don't really want to be good at this job?
She swirled around my face and hair, trying to console me.
No one with a beating heart could enjoy killing their own.
I'm not human, I argued. I'm less than that.
Colin, my sweet girl, you are still human. Your body may be unchanging, but your soul still bends and sways. I assure you, in the deepest part of yourself, you are still connected to humanity.
I kept crying, my tears joining her waves. Then why can't I cope with any human contact? Elizabeth has had her lovers.
As have many a siren before her. It's not surprising, considering how beautiful you are.
If it's so typical, then why can't I do that?
She laughed, a motherly sound in my head, as if she knew me better than I knew myself.
Because you and Elizabeth are very different people. She's looking for passion and excitement. In her dark world, those interludes are like fireworks. You long for relationships, for love. It's why you protect your sister so fiercely, why you always return to me even when I don't call, and why you mourn so heavily at taking lives.
I considered her words. I wondered how much of our past lives carried over with us. Elizabeth grew up in the era of free love. I grew up in till death do us part.
I fear this will always be a sore spot for you. You must become satisfied with the small circle of people you have. Even if you found someone who was your soulmate in every way, you could never stay with him.
Oh? I squashed everything about Akinlee into the darkest corner of my mind, not wanting her to know about the flicker of his life across mine. Then I felt silly for questioning what she said. The words were an echo of what I had thought when I'd left anyway.
There are the technical reasons why. That you would never age, that you might show your stronger than human qualities, but it also comes down to what you are.
A siren? I asked, the answer feeling too obvious.
No. Mine.
I felt my forehead furrow in confusion. I guess I'd always thought those were one and the same.
Why do you think there are only young women in my service? I cannot take mothers, and I cannot take wives.
I squinted, having never considered this before. Why not?
Wives will long for their husbands. Singing a song that primarily entices men is excruciating for a truly faithful wife. And to separate a mother from her child is the height of cruelty. I think any parent forced to endure a life permanently distanced from their child would lose their sanity. It wouldn't do for someone with that kind of agony to live this life. They could be volatile. That's dangerous for all of us. But daughters? Daughters are meant to strike out from their families eventually.
True. I wrap my arms around myself. Though I don't think I had any great ambitions before. I'm not sure I do now either.
Hardly the point. You're very driven. Eventually, you will find something to put all that energy into, and you will be unstoppable. Even now, with something you take no joy in, you do your tasks dutifully because it's all you can do. There's something beautiful in that, Colin.
I was slightly consoled by this, by the thought that there could be more in my future than I'd imagined. And even though it was difficult to accept praise in bringing death, I was proud that I'd never failed her.
And I will answer your final question before you ask it again. I know you want to hear that there was something special about you or your sisters, that there's a method to all of it. But the truth is, I am always aware of the time, how close the end is for any of my sirens. I was looking for someone, not knowing if there would be a girl on the ship or not. But of the 5 suitable young women on your ship, you cried out. When I spoke, you answered. So I took you.
That's it?
I'm afraid so.
It was a bit jarring to discover it was all so random, though I don't know what I was hoping to hear. As if she understood that, her voice in my head softened, became even more affectionate.
However, this is something you need to know. While the choosing isn't driven by a specific desire for you, the life after you become mine very much is. You are so prized by me. You all are. And I don't want you to think your life has been wasted when it has been so precious to me.
I scrunched up my face in tears again, fearing that I'd somehow insulted her with my questions.
Don't think that. I know your life is different from mine. I accept you as you are.
I nodded, trying to take control of my emotions. I'm just overwhelmed by it all.
I know. And you may stay that way for the rest of your sentence. Don't let it ruin the time you have left with your sisters, with me. We love you.
I nodded.
This has been a lot for one day. Go now. Go and live.
She gently pushed me toward the shore until the sand was sturdy enough under my feet that I could walk. It wasn't until I got to the bottom of the long porch steps that I let myself think about all that her words meant. The ocean's possessiveness was obvious now more than ever, but despite all she had said, my mind kept returning to Akinlee. In the past few days alone, it felt as if my affection for him had doubled, and he wasn't even near me. He'd been so extraordinarily kind. I kept telling myself this was a crush, a temporary flighty thing that would pass as quickly as it came. But I missed him so deeply it hurt. Then there was the worry over my sisters, the people who live this life with me. I'd been unfair in uprooting them so quickly, but I hadn't known what else to do. Now we were here in this town on the edge of someplace big, but still distanced enough from everything that nothing exciting would happen for them here. All I wanted to do was heal. I wanted to find a way to wrap myself up tightly enough so that the pain and sadness couldn't cut through. After talking to the ocean, I wasn't sure that was possible. Maybe I had to exist in constant sadness. She told me to live. I didn't know how to tell her that simply being alive was not enough to be called living. 9. I kept to my room mostly. I kept waiting for something to happen, which isn't how life works. In closed environments, everything just repeats. Elizabeth, of course, was the first to decide to head out. After nearly a month of being cooped up in the house, she finally came knocking on my door. Miyaka just sold another piece. We're going shopping to celebrate. You want anything? I shrugged. Some tights, maybe? And a sweater or two? I can fake a winter wardrobe with those if I need to go out. Is that something you plan on doing soon? Going out, I mean? She said it casually, but her eyes were sharp. I turned back to my book. I don't know. Not today. You sure? You can come and pick out your own tights. I realize that's just begging for trouble, but still. She teased. I gave her a weak smile. I'm fine here. Elizabeth lingered in the doorway a while, inhaling a few times as if she might argue with me, but ultimately letting it drop. Okay then. We'll be back soon. She left the door cracked, and I could hear her whispering worriedly to Miyaka. I tried to be nonchalant, but she says she wants to stay. She just needs time, Miyaka whispered back. Either something happened that she's not ready to tell us about, or she sincerely can't bear being a siren anymore. She's depressed. Well, how do we get her out of it? I can't live like this, Elizabeth hissed. She would do this for us. In a way, she has. As low as their voices were, Elizabeth dropped hers even more. Did you talk to her? Did you tell her how it's been? The ocean knows. she agrees that patience is the best path. I closed my eyes. I knew I wasn't in the greatest mood at the moment, but I was surprised that they thought they needed a plan of action to deal with me. I couldn't believe they went to the ocean. I was a split second away from stomping out into the living room and telling them to mind their own damn business for once when I heard her call.
Quickly, she urged. Your new sister awaits, and she's very scared.
I bolted out my door and out of the house, seeing that Miyaka and Elizabeth were already on the move. I looked down the empty beach behind us, thankful that winter was coming and no one wanted to be near the water. We ran into the surf, lifting our legs high until we were deep enough to be swept away. Where are we going? I asked.
India, be gentle with this one.
Of course. Something about this felt similar to when Miyaka had joined us, and that had me worried. Miyaka had lived in a fishing village off the north coast of Japan. She never should have been on the boat in the first place, according to her sobs when we'd first come to her. She'd said she had told her family again and again how she feared the water and that she would do twice the work once everything was brought to land if they'd only let her stay on shore. They'd ignored her. They made her go out on the fishing boat. And then they'd lost her. I'd held on to a few things over the last 80 years. A vague memory of my mother's face, the knowledge that my father had a mustache, and the fact that I had two brothers, though I couldn't recall their names. But Miyaka only remembered the name of her village and the details of her story because of us telling it back to her. Elizabeth had held on to a lot, though it mostly seemed to be out of spite. She didn't like her family much, and it was as if she kept their names in her memory so she could curse them in her head. See, Jacob? I traveled Europe. See, Mom? I've eaten delicacies. See, everyone? I did more than you ever could. I didn't know what Aisling remembered. She never said. But it was the thought of Miyaka, so tiny and shaken after being swept overboard, that moved me so urgently to help this stranger. And even as fast as we moved, I wished it were faster. Colin, I turned to see Aisling falling into place beside us. Hey, I answered, worry in my voice. It sounds like a bad one. We're going to have to be really careful this time. I think you should give the speech. I turned to Aisling. But I've never done it. You're the oldest. It should be you. I'll be gone so soon, Colin. It's only weeks now. She should hear it from someone she'll have time to truly bond with. I couldn't hide my nerves. It was a huge responsibility to explain to our new sister what she would be signing up for. Aisling laced her fingers through mine as we swam. I'll back you up if you need me, okay? What she said made sense, though I was still scared of getting it wrong. But I couldn't let Aisling down. It was like the ocean said. I put all of myself into a task. Okay. We focused ahead, searching the surface for the outline of a body miraculously set on the water as if it were a bed. Finally, the four of us slowed in the Arabian Sea. Up there, Miyaka said. We swam toward the girl, unsure how she would react to us. Shifting upright, we climbed into the air and were faced with the sickest sight I'd seen in my many, many years. The girl wore a simple, plain sari. It had been torn in several places, and the damage obviously hadn't come from falling or some other little accident. It had been viciously ripped at. There were fresh bruises all over her arms and legs, but most horrifically, when we followed the trail of welts to her ankles and wrists, we saw there were cinder blocks tied to her, keeping her trapped. Untie the ropes, hurry, I commanded, setting myself to undo a knot on her arm. The poor thing weakly rolled her head in my direction, panting, still exhausted from her struggle.
Please don't kill me.
Her voice was shaking. My heart ached. No, we won't hurt you. Let us get these off so we can talk. She nodded. Done, Elizabeth announced.
Me too.
Aisling took the girl by her arm, helping her sit upright. This girl, with her cinnamon skin and sleepy eyes, looked down at her blotched arms, touching several of her bruises as if she were counting.
Why?
She cried.
It wasn't my fault.
What wasn't? I asked, stroking her hair.
Being a girl.
Mieka and Elizabeth came close, hoping to comfort her, but Aisling stayed back, focused on me.
What is your name?
I asked.
Padma.
She wiped at her runny nose. How old are you? I tried to keep my tone calm and gentle. She strained to think through her confusion.
16.
Padma, what do you remember? She shook her head.
I don't want to remember.
I stroked her hair again, feeling the fear arise in her. That's all right, but can you tell us how you got into the water? She looked around at us, a mixture of curiosity and shame on her face.
Papa, I feel sick,
Elizabeth whispered. Be strong, for Padma, Aisling urged. I too was moved to do everything I could to make this easy for her. This moment wasn't about any of us. It was singularly hers. Now I knew how Marilyn must have felt when she'd spoken to me and Mieka, how Aisling must have felt about Elizabeth. After everything, despite what was coming ahead, I just wanted this girl to live.
He threw me in,
she confessed, staring at her hands.
No dowry. A girl is too expensive. He beat my mother, then me. I don't remember how I got from my house to the water, but I can still feel the dock on my back. I woke up before he pushed me in.
He didn't look sad at all. I swallowed, composing myself. I knew about Mieka's family's disregard of her fears. I knew Elizabeth's family didn't like her rebellious streak, but none of us had been through anything like this.
Padma,
I started gently. I'm Colin. This is Aisling, Elizabeth, and Mieka.
Please let me explain this right, I prayed. Please let my words make her want to stay.
We are very special young women, and we'd like to ask you to join us.
Join you where?
Padma's gaze was wary. I smiled. Everywhere, really. We are singers, sirens. You might have read stories about us in books or heard us mentioned in fairy tales. We belong to the ocean. We sing for her so she can live, so she can support the earth. Do you understand?
No,
Aisling laughed. Neither did I.
Me either,
Elizabeth said, and Mieka nodded in agreement. Padma smiled cautiously at us.
Your skin is so pale, she breathed, amazed at Elizabeth.
Yeah. Elizabeth held out her hand, and Padma ran her fingers across the palm until Elizabeth jumped back.
Sorry, that tickles.
Padma let out a tiny laugh, looking down. She gasped, beginning to come to her senses.
Are we on water?
I nodded. We belong to the ocean. If you choose to join us, you will be hers as well. You won't age or be sick. You will stay just as you are for 100 years. I paused, letting her take that in. I wished I'd paid more attention to that detail when Marilyn changed me. For all that time, you will be a weapon of sorts. Your voice will be deadly, and you will have to keep it a secret, for all of our sakes. After those 100 years pass, you will get your voice back, your life back. But until then, you serve the ocean. You will never be alone. We'll take care of you, and the ocean will too.
And my family?
I shook my head. I'm sorry, but you will never see any of them again. Her face crumpled, and she cried openly. It will be okay, Mieka promised. I missed my family once as well, but you will have an unimaginable life now.
I don't want to go back to them, Padma blurted. If joining you means staying away from my family, I'll take it. I'm so grateful to get away.
Aisling and I smiled at each other. So you'll stay with us? I asked. She looked up, her eyes wide.
Yes! Oh, yes, please take me away.
Can we stay with her? I asked the ocean. For the change?
Yes, I think that's wise.
What was that?
Padma asked. We have much to explain. But for now, you need to come underwater. There's a little of the ocean inside you now so that you can hear her, but she needs to finish in order to keep you. Padma was nervous, but she nodded all the same. Watch, Elizabeth. My wild sister rose, took a few steps, then jumped gracefully into the ocean as if she were simply hopping off the curb of a street. See? Nothing to it. Let's go. I stood, and Miyaka, Aisling, and I escorted Padma under the water. Adorably, she held her breath. We swam around her, never letting her feel alone, as the ocean opened Padma's mouth and forced a strange, dark liquid down her throat. I had no idea what it was exactly, or where it came from, but I knew the very same water was running through my veins, mingling with my blood, keeping me alive. And I knew that magic hung suspended in my lungs and throat, making my voice so deadly. Padma's bruises healed over. Her skin grew luminous, and without aging a day, she suddenly looked like someone who had spent years figuring out who she was and had comfortably settled into herself. When the ocean was done, Padma hung in the water, a little jittery as she relearned how to breathe. Let's go. Miyaka grabbed her hand and pulled her toward home. We watched as her ragged sari fell away, and I assumed she mustn't have felt it, seeing as she didn't go to cover herself. But she did notice when the salt stuck to her, creating her very first siren dress. As we walked out of the water to return to our house, Padma held out her arms, looking at herself. I have been reborn. I am a goddess. She was radiant, laughing as Miyaka and Elizabeth led her and Aisling into our house. Keeping my feet in the water, I thought, you made a good choice.
It was a difficult call, in all honesty. She was torn about living.
Because she thought living meant returning to her family?
I suppose. The images in her mind were gruesome at best. Her father, you already know about, but her mother always kept her distance. It was like Padma was a crime she was guilty of, and she wanted to remove herself from her daughter as much as possible.
I can't imagine any mother behaving that way. I hope she's already forgetting.
It seems that way. You're all different, but I would guess she'll let it all go if she can.
I walked along the coast, my feet in the water as I stood in front of our beach house, watching the shadows of my sisters as they moved around the living room. I felt thankful that Padma had chosen to come with us, interested in my new sister in a way I hadn't been interested in anything since we left Miami. I have a question. Was this solely for her?
What do you mean?
Did you guess she would wake me up?
I hoped.
I hope too. Colin! Elizabeth called, and I tried not to panic about her voice going out so freely in the air. There was no one in sight, but that didn't mean there was no one in earshot. Voices carried. Padma's trying to steal a pair of your shoes already. She laughed with delight, and I sighed, so happy that Padma was falling into step with us as if she'd been here all along. Tell her she can have anything she wants. 10. Our small house was suddenly full to the brim. Elizabeth took Padma under her wing, thrilled to finally have a younger sister, and Aisling stayed with us instead of returning to her cottage, since her days as a siren were now so few. We spent the first night around a bonfire Miyaka made, drinking delicious coffee and exposing Padma to the wonderful world of s'mores. But we don't have to eat? She asked yet again. No, Aisling explained. Lack of food, water, or sleep will not harm you at all. We indulge in them sometimes for fun, but you don't need them.
And I can't get hurt?
Nope, Elizabeth said excitedly. Look at this. She walked over to the fire and stuck her hand directly into the flame. I turned my eyes to Padma, watching the disbelief on her face even as she saw it happening.
Do you even feel anything?
Elizabeth shrugged, pulling back her hand.
I can tell it's hot, but it doesn't hurt. It's hard to explain.
Padma looked delighted.
So I can't get a cold? A fever? Anything?
No, I laughed. You are a superhero. Maybe a supervillain, I added, not really sure. Padma's arrival had made me so happy, the thought didn't bring me down. Either way, you're strong and safe now. A fever is a joke to us. She sighed. Just as we all had, she'd refused to take off her first sea salt dress, touching the beautiful, shimmering folds. I once had a cut that got infected, and I had a fever for days. I thought I was going to die. I remember when I woke up, drenched in sweat after it broke. Padma shook her head at the memory. It's hard to imagine that being impossible now. I glanced at Aisling, who had the same questioning look in her eyes. Padma, that's a very specific memory, Aisling said slowly. She shrugged it off with a smile. It was very scary, hard to forget. But that's the thing, I said, touching her arm. Most sirens forget their pasts incredibly quickly. I can't remember the names of anyone in my family, let alone a particular day I was sick. Elizabeth piped up. It was a struggle for me, but I remember their names. I even kept tabs on my family for a bit. They were never really keen on me being less than a lady, and every once in a while, I'd find out something about them, like that my parents finally got divorced and my brother flunked out of law school. It was validating, like they weren't perfect either. I stared at Elizabeth. We all knew why she held on, but she'd never told us these particular details. I wondered what it was about Padma that made her share it with everyone. Now I knew that Elizabeth had kept a mental scrapbook, and that was something I understood very well. Aisling tilted her head. All we're saying is, even a few hours in, it's unusual for you to still know that detail about yourself. Padma looked into each of our eyes, worried. So, am I not healthy? Not like you? How did you get that cut you had on your arm? Mieka asked. Padma barely paused to think. Papa, he hit me with a pan. Mieka nodded as if she'd assumed this was the case. You've been through a lot, Padma. More than any of us, that's for sure. But you can let that all go. He's never coming to get you. And if he does, he won't survive. Padma's face scrunched together, and she buried her face in her hands as the tears came. I immediately moved closer to hold her, and the others came as well.
I don't want to remember, she whimpered. I don't want to remember anything before today.
Don't worry, I whispered. It will all go away, and we're here for you until it does. I felt her shoulders slump and release, as if that was so much more than she could have hoped for.
We travel, Elizabeth promised. You'll get to see the whole world.
And we try the best foods, Aisling added, smiling encouragingly. We've all learned sign language, so we can communicate even in a crowd. We'll teach you. Everything is going to be all right now. I stroked her hair as she nodded, accepting our words like gifts. It had been a long time since I thought about just how sacred this sisterhood was, how we would be there for one another as long as our service lasted. Today was the first time in a while that I found myself grateful for it. Padma adjusted a little better over the next few days, and I stepped back to let Elizabeth and Mieka have their hand in teaching her. I sat on a dune with Aisling as my other sisters showed Padma how to talk with the ocean. They had their feet in the surf, and I could see them using gestures to explain how she could call to you wherever you were, but how we needed contact to speak back. Luckily, contact could come through many things. Falling snow, a mud puddle, and even dense enough fog could carry our words to her. I've never seen them be so responsible. I fiddled with the seagrass and the dry sand just in front of one of those tiny fences that helped stop the wind from sweeping it all away. Aisling laughed. I think Padma's sorrow makes them minimize their own. Not that their sadness or regrets don't matter, but her heartbreak draws them near. I feel like I've been greedy. We knew that Mieka was mistreated and that Elizabeth's family acted like she'd never amount to much. The second life has been a blessing for them, and I treat it like a prison.
It is, in a way, she said heavily.
But it's worse for me, or at least I feel like it is.
Why, do you think?
I shook my head.
My life wasn't like theirs. My family was well off. Even when everyone else was losing money, we were making it.
and I was always treated like someone special. I squinted, trying to grab at long-lost thoughts. I was the oldest, the only girl. I feel like there were expectations, but nothing that upset me. I think we were happy, mostly. I'm sorry you've been so unhappy since, she said quietly. I sighed, staring out at the ocean. Colin, I've known you the longest. I've seen you cry for days after some of our singings and wake up from nightmares clawing at the air. I've watched you draw in when others flourish. She shook her head. I have a few weeks. She said that since the next singing is still months away, I can go as soon as I like. I asked for some time to say goodbye to you all, to help Padma adjust, and to prepare. I blinked back my tears. I can't believe you'll be gone so soon. The joy I had at gaining a new sister was on par with the pain of losing another. I know. It's almost scary for me not to do this anymore. She swallowed. But that's beside the point. Colin, I want more than anything to help you find hope in this life, to have as much happiness now as you did before we'd met. What can I do? I don't want you to spend the next 20 years suffering when you might be able to do something remarkable. I felt my eyes stinging. It's not just the work. That's bad enough, but I... Aisling wrapped her arm around me. Please tell me what's going on. I won't judge you or break your confidence. Whatever it is, you clearly can't carry it alone. I looked at my sister, wondering if I could finally confess what had been pressing on my heart for weeks. I'd pushed Akinlee so far down in my mind, feeling as if the only way to dull how much I missed him was to make him as small as possible. But here, finally, was a chance to speak. Aisling would be gone soon, and this memory would go right along with her. I've been guarding this, I confessed. I don't want the others to know. If you need someone to tell your deepest, darkest secret to, trust me, no one could keep it better than me. I nodded. There was a boy. Aisling laughed. Honey, plenty of sirens have boys. No, I said, not a passing affair. I think I'm in love. Oh, her face fell. Oh, Colin. I know. I curled into a ball on the dune, feeling foolish. I told myself it was just a crush. It all started and ended in 10 days. How could that be anything close to love? But I think about him every day. I banish him from my mind when I go to the ocean because I know what she'd say. No mothers, no wives. She wouldn't want you to fall in love, Aisling said, something bitter in her tone. Exactly. There was silence for a moment, nothing but wind and the crash of waves. I knew Aisling wanted to help, but what could she do? I knew the rules. Don't tell me his name, but tell me about him. Why do you think you're in love? I smiled without thinking about it. Have you ever had someone see you? Like, really see you? I know people are drawn in by our beauty, but it was as if he bypassed that altogether. He made me feel like all the bad I'd done was erasable, that there was something good in me, and nothing got in his way. Aisling, I'm telling you, he worked around my silence. He would guess at things I might say and answer in turn, or find a way to make sure I'd be able to communicate. The worst part, I pursed my lips, not wanting to cry. The worst part is that in 20 years, I'll forget I even had this feeling. And if I could get it again, I'm not sure I'd want it with someone else. I know it's ridiculous to think that something so brief could be so life-changing, but I swear it feels real. Aisling brushed her hand through my hair. I believe you. I fell in love once in a matter of minutes. I chuckled. How could you even remember? I stared at Aisling, wide-eyed in disbelief. Do you have a lover? No, she said firmly. I have a daughter. I was speechless. Well, I had a daughter. Aisling smiled at the memory. And then I had a grandson, who is doing very well in his old age. And now I have a great-granddaughter. Her eyes brimmed with happy tears. She happens to bear my name. I shook my head. How? I'm private. Even in my own head, I'm guarded. When my ship went down, I fought